It is another Madden Monday podcast here at Trib Live. Tim Benz and Mark Madden with you. The Penguins lose in overtime again. Matt Canada is staying in Pittsburgh. Andrew McCutchen is coming back to Pittsburgh. And it looks like the Cincinnati Bengals might be going back to the Super Bowl. A lot to get to with Mark. We'll start off with the Penguins because Mark was at a viewing party for the Penguins game against the Devils. Mark, did you just decide to leave before overtime since you knew how that would turn out based on the Penguins' OT record this year?
No, I stayed because I have an obligation to the venue, which was Marino's in Greensburg, and to my legions of fans. But they're, 2-8 now in 3-on-3 overtime? And it's ridiculous. And the big part of it is they never win the opening draw. So much of that is about winning the opening draw and then staying ahead of the opposition's changes, keeping guys out there tired. And it sucks that 3-on-3 overtime has come to that. I did a column for the Trib saying how it's a failure and they need to switch to 4-on-4, which is what it was prior. And I don't know, play 7 minutes, 10 minutes, and then if it's still tied, it's a tie because I'm tired of the shootout as well. But New Jersey did what Carolina did. They put their faceoff specialist out for the opening draw. He won it, then he got off the ice. And I would say the Penguins should put their faceoff specialist out there, but they don't have one. And it makes me long for the days, Tim. Remember, and this was before Mike Sullivan, and Sullivan wants all-around players. He doesn't want specialists. That's why Ryan Reeves, you know, got minimal ice after Rutherford got him to be the antidote for Tom Wilson. And he played so little that Rutherford felt obliged to trade him. And then they really missed Reeves and his physicality and just his threat in that 2018 playoff series against Washington, which was the first the Penguins lost in their current ongoing streak of having not won a playoff series since then. But remember when they had Eric Christensen, who would just, you know, be great in the shootout. Mm-hmm. They had a guy named Mike Zigomanis, who wasn't very good, but he'd win all the draws. Instead, we have a bunch of guys who are all-around players. The problem is they're all-around bad. And, boy, they just lose that face-off in overtime, and things go straight downhill from there, more often than not.
Yeah, you're talking about that Michael McLeod guy who ended up winning, 13 of 13 draws in the game. They put him out there against the face-off. The Devils maintained possession for most of the overtime. Jari did make one save. What'd you think of the penalty call on Pettersson for jumping on the ice too soon?
It's tight, but he did.
I thought so too. I know Bob Barry made the comment on the telecast that he thought it was the proper call. I agree, especially when you materially affect the play like that by jumping on the ice.
Yeah, had they not called it, I'd not have been outraged either. But if you put me on the spot to make the call, I would call too many men, like you said, because it impacted the play and directly what would have been the result.
Mark Madden with us. Mark, as far as their overall state right now, the Penguins, you mentioned the specialization issue. It's not like this Penguins team is cap capable of being able to go out and find those specialists either. That's a big think overhaul for them.
No, they're screwed. I mean, I hate to say that. And they might make the playoffs anyway, but mostly they're screwed. Tim, their bottom six is absolutely useless except for Bluger and McGinn on the penalty kill. Other than that, they're absolutely useless. Sid's goal today marked the top six, the forwards. Those six players scoring 21 of their last 23 goals. And that sounds impressive from the standpoint of those players. But it don't sound too good for the bottom six or for the defensemen. And that's kind of the hidden shame of the Penguins right now. Not only is their bottom six useless, which everybody talks about, but their defensemen never score.
There isn't much pop at all from the blue line. That much is clear. Now, you brought it up, the playoff scenario, the playoff picture. They are currently the last team in as a wild card. We're projecting a long way out, but just for the pacing element, Mark, we've long thought that it looked like it'd be five teams from the Metro to get in, but suddenly Florida... Florida's, 3 points behind the Penguins and tied with the Islanders for ninth. And the Penguins get Florida next, I believe, on Tuesday night. So suddenly that's an important game.
I don't think the Penguins will make it. If you made me say right now, and things change in the wink of an eye, with this team especially, right? But there are so many teams not far behind the Penguins. I can't imagine none of them going on a significant winning streak and jumping over the Penguins. Does that make sense? And I can't envision the Penguins having a significant winning streak to rise up and hold those teams off, let alone, you know, jump to second or third in the Metro, which they got to do, by the way, if they have any hope of winning a playoff series. Because if they get a wild card, they're going to play Carolina or Boston almost certainly, and that would not be a long series. In fact, if they played Boston, they would get swept.
Yeah, the only thing that would help them avoid that is if Carolina were to somehow sink in the Metro. They've cooled after being so hot, especially right around those times playing the Penguins. But I don't think the fact that the Penguins got swept by the Hurricanes was strictly about Carolina being in a hot stretch, Mark. That matchup just looks bad for Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah, and Boston looks even worse because Boston's an old team like Pittsburgh, except they didn't trade all their draft picks like the Penguins did. I'm not complaining about that, by the way. You know, if the Penguins maybe got an extra cup out of that, it's worth it. But Boston didn't, so they have Pastrnak, who's 24, a real good young forward, and they have McAvoy on defense, a real good young defenseman. He's, I think, 25. So, yeah, the Penguins just in a bad spot. And, you know, people talk about Hextall being, you know, handicapped by being tight against the cap. Well, he created that. And it was created by too many no-movement clauses as well. I think there's 9 on the current roster. And if I had to point to one or two things that have killed this team, it's Hextall giving those contract extensions to Carter and Kapanen because they killed the cap and they killed the third line.
What'd you make of New Jersey, Mark, and what do you make of them in the division? They got off to that ridiculous 19-4 start. Then they fell on hard times, and I thought, okay, this is the real Devils. This is who they're going to be. Maybe they'll be a team out of the Metro that sinks out of the race. But since then, they've steadied the ship. They're within hollering distance, just 2 points the time we're speaking, behind Carolina. 30-12-4 after the win against the Penguins today. I guess we can't dismiss them so fast.
They're making the playoffs, Tim. I thought they might slide out. Even Mike Rupp, a former Devil, said that when they just had the 13-game winning streak earlier in the season. But, yeah, they're pretty good, and they have steadied the ship after a rough patch. And that's easier said than done for a team as young as them. So I give them a lot of credit for that. I will say I thought the Penguins managed the game pretty good today. I don't think the Devils, you know, necessarily deserved to win more than the Penguins did during regulation play. I thought the Penguins played, you know, concise, fundamental hockey. And, you know, it's a shame they let up a goal in the first minute, which is just so Penguins this year.
Well, Mark, the good news is for Ron Hextall, for as much heat as he may catch from the Pittsburgh sports scene, Matt Canada is staying, so no one's going to catch more heat than that.
Yeah, I hesitate to even talk about that, Tim. It has become such a crutch for those in our profession who, frankly, are lazy and suck, and I don't like to be caught up in it. I just don't think it's that big of a deal. I myself would have replaced him, but I don't think it's a disaster that they didn't. The offense did improve down the stretch. You can't isolate the improvements and say he wasn't responsible, whereas, I don't know, Kenny Pickett, whoever, was responsible. So I ain't got no problem.
You saw for about 2 or 3 days there this scuttlebutt of, well, if Canada doesn't officially get reinstated or the team doesn't say anything about keeping him, maybe they can go get Byron Leftwich. Well, who wanted Byron Leftwich? Look at the numbers surrounding that team this year.
Well, yeah, but he got kind of caught in the same vortex because you never could convince me that Byron Leftwich was Tom Brady's boss with Tampa. He's just the scapegoat because Brady failed, because Brady's not allowed to fail.
Well, that's what I'm sort of saying. It's for better or for worse, you're right, it's the same element of the argument that if you want to put everything on Byron Leftwich's back when things went bad and say it's all about him, okay, well then was it all good for Leftwich when he was coaching Brady? Well, no, of course not, because Brady is Brady. Like, I don't think you look at Leftwich and say he was going to be all that more of an instant answer than Matt Canada was.
Well, Tim, 8 coordinators got fired. They're the scapegoats, pure and simple. They are the scapegoats.
I also echo your sentiments insofar as now that the decision's been made for him to come back, stop bitching about it, and let's start talking about what the offense needs to do to get better. And what
let's start talking about the Penguins and the Pirates and the NFL playoffs and something the frig else. Seriously, we're so far away from even OTAs, the draft, all this stuff. It's months away. We need to give it a rest. I mean, if you want me to, I'll talk about it, but who gives a crap?
Well, you don't want to talk about the Pirates, do you?
Actually, I think there's more interesting topics there now than there will be during the actual season.
What, because of some of the things that Kutch said?
Oh, no, he was totally full of horse manure. Like, when he said he came here to win and this isn't a one-and-done thing, dude, you signed a one-year contract. By definition, it's a one-and-done thing. If you want to say you're going to stay beyond that, there's no evidence that's going to happen. If you signed a two-year contract, I'd feel better about that. But I think that I think their lineup's decent. I think their pitching still sucks. And I think they should sign Trevor Bauer, which we've talked about. But what if they get to the All-Star break and they still haven't traded Reynolds and they're like 55-55? And that's more possible now than it was, you know, before they signed Kutch. And, you know, they do have a decent lineup. I mean, decent, not great, decent. And the idea of hitting Neil Cruz leadoff when he never walks is just silly. But you know, what I mean, it'll be the crowning achievement, Tim. It's what I'm rooting for. If they're like near 500 and then they trade Reynolds, that'd be awesome. And then they trade Kutch too.
That was very easily assuaged if you were Ben Cherington and he was asked directly about that. What comes in the summertime if you're in your usual mode of spinning off-season acquisitions for future assets? You know, he basically answered that question by saying, let's try to win early and we'll worry about the summer in the summer. Well, then that leaves to me that it's entirely possible that he could be traded. And I don't know why you wouldn't just hold on to the whole feel-good element and say the plan is to keep him all year. Even if you don't mean it, what would be the first time they change their minds or change their tones for this fan base?
Yeah, but let me tell you, insofar as they're bringing him back solely for PR, that's fair to say, right, Tim?
Yeah, there's not enough baseball element there to make this a big deal.
Right, he ain't David Justice in Moneyball. He ain't that good still. Okay, so they're bringing him back for PR. They should keep him for the whole year. That would be the right thing to do. But as you said, when's the last time they did the right thing? They're certainly not beholden, are they?
They aren't, and I think this has the potential to go badly, especially if Kutch isn't hitting and they think they have guys in the system that should be getting at-bats and should be getting time. And then it is going to look like just a PR thing and a PR thing gone bad.
Depends what their record is.
Well, I think we know what direction that's going to go, right? I mean, like, Kutch is making 100-loss analogies and saying this 100-loss team is better than the 100-loss team I was on. That doesn't exactly resonate with me.
Well, Tim, I am willing to pretend that they're better and might reach 500 by the trade deadline if it opens up the possibility of me embarrassing them even more later.
See, I think I'm being optimistic by saying they're going to lose somewhere between 90 and 95. If you maybe put a number on it right now, I'd say they're about a 92-loss team.
I think I'm being optimistic by saying I might go twice or three times. I'm not kidding about the Trevor Bauer thing. I think that should be the easiest decision in the world to sign him, especially when there seems to be no interest in him anywhere else. There was a quote in the New York Post. A unnamed baseball executive said, he's going to have to find a team on another planet to pitch for. Well, in terms of the major leagues, the Pirates are that other planet.
Does Kutch provide a buffer for that as well as maybe trading Reynolds? Is he that popular?
You mean like a buffer if they brought in Bauer?
Yeah.
Well, they're not going to bring in Bauer, so I'm as bad as anybody for talking about it. I will say, though, regarding the Steelers' offense, Tim, the usual suspects are saying stuff like Pickett and Pickens will be the next Montana to Rice. Or if they got Jordan Addison, Pickett to Addison would be the next Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase because they both played together at LSU. Tim, I've really thought about it, and I think Pickett to Addison could indeed be the next Pickett to Ja'Marr Chase if Pickett and Addison were like 10 times better.
Well, I already think that Burrow to Chase might be the next Rice in Montana, if you really want to think about it. If you want to draw the analogy, we might be looking at it right now.
Oh, Tim, I don't really want to think about it.
Do you want to think about the Bengals in the Super Bowl again?
Do you want to think about the Bengals dominating the Steelers for like the next decade? Because that could easily happen.
I already have. In fact, I was all over the Bengals this year. I think a lot of people were way too quick to dismiss them as being fluky. Oh, they were too healthy for too long. I heard that a bunch last year. I heard about, you know, the close wins in the playoffs. But I still thought they were better than the Ravens. And I think they're going to be better than the Ravens next year. And I know they're still going to be better than the Steelers and the Browns.
Yeah. I'm not sure what else to add. Unless Lamar Jackson's mom could strike a favorable deal with management. How about he allegedly turned down $133 million guaranteed? You know what's happening, Tim? Because Arizona made a bad deal with Kyler Murray, and because Cleveland made a bad deal with Deshaun Watson, guys like Lamar Jackson are expecting their team to make the same mistake. Whereas, you know, not every team is beholden to make that kind of error.
Yeah, it's like the Christian Kirk thing on steroids. Like what he did with wide receivers, everybody pointed to that contract. And actually, Kirk wasn't bad. He just can't live up to what he did to the whole market. And I think there's a similar balloon effect happening after those two guys that you pointed out.
Christian Kirk should have caught that ball on Saturday, Tim.
I was thinking more of Agnew, the guy that fumbled. Wasn't that the bigger play, don't you think?
No, that long ball that he didn't get a hold of. We could debate which is the bigger play, but I know Kirk should have caught that ball.
As far as what Jacksonville showed, does that look like a team to you that's going to make some noise? Could they and the Bengals be teams to be reckoned with in the future? Or is it still the Chiefs conference to have for a while, do you think?
You know, I don't know why I'm saying this. I think Buffalo's time's already come and gone. You know where they blew it, Tim? And this will sound cold, so God forgive me. They expended too much emotion with the DeMar Hamlin thing. They were more worried about him showing up to watch the games than they were winning them. And I think that distraction really showed. Once he was okay, he should have been put in the rearview mirror and focus should have been put on football again.
I think you saw the biggest difference when it came to quarterback play. And it's not like Allen was terrible, but Burrow was unflappable. Like that guy just doesn't blink. And I think that's the biggest difference between the two franchises right now.
Burrow's a better quarterback than anybody except Mahomes, and maybe Mahomes too.
And definitely Mahomes next week if he's playing on a high ankle sprain.
Yeah, I like when people say it's only a high ankle sprain. That's a severe injury.
Didn't Kentrell Bell have a high ankle sprain that ended a Pro Bowl career 2 years in?
Yeah, but they kept making a comeback early.
Yeah, that's true. He was the team doctor quote, right?
Yep. Don't forget, when you say team doctor, team comes ahead of doctor.
Are you thankful as I am that we're not going to have to see a neutral site AFC championship game now?
Well, I'm still writing a column about it. I still think it's something they're going to look at in the future. I think it would have been easier for them to do if they had had one this year and it would have been a success. But there's so much more money in doing neutral site championship games. And one thing that we should be aware of, if they do go to neutral site championship games, Tim, there'll never again be an AFC championship game in Pittsburgh. I mean, there might not be anyway, the way things are going. But you know, they just would put them in domes or in outdoor stadiums in places where they don't really have winter.
I think it's a bad idea. I hate it. I think it's adding...
I think it's a bad idea on any number of levels, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's not only disproportionately unfair to the fans, I think it's disproportionately unfair to the team that wins the conference. I mean, Mark, the one thing I've really liked about going to a 7-team format, for as much as it cheapens who gets in, because the 7th seed, the first 2 years they've done this in both conferences has been pretty weak looking, it's at least a big reward for whoever wins the conference.
No now, question.
Now if you win the conference, Mark, you get one playoff game at home. Like, at least the Bills, who were the 2 seed, and whoever the 2 seed was in the NFC, I can't remember the bracketing off my head, it would have been Minnesota had they won the first game. At least you get 2 playoff games at home if you're the 2 seed. If you're the 1 seed, you're only guaranteed 1 home playoff game. That doesn't seem fair.
And it hurts you financially, too. You'd almost rather not have the bye and play the 8 seed to get the home game revenue. Because, when they take these conference championship games to go neutral site, the NFL owns the game then. They would get the – well, all 32 teams would get the revenue.
Yes.
But the revenue would be significantly more because they would put the game out for bids, like the Super Bowl. The city would pay the league to host it, which is why it'll probably happen if the league pushes for it because, you know, only one team can get that revenue per year the way it is. It is terrible for the fans, though. At that point, attending the AFC championship game or the NFC championship game becomes a rich fan's endeavor, period.
Before I go, Mark, how was the crowd out in Greensburg for the game, for the watch party?
Tim, this is something I hadn't experienced at any of my watch parties before. They sold reserve seating.
Wow. Now, is that for you, the super genius, or is that for the Penguins and actual optimism that they're going to turn things around?
Obviously for me, the super genius, Tim. And now when I say sold, I don't think you had to pay extra, but you could make reservations.
Is this a selling point you'll be using for future viewing parties that you'll be having?
Yeah, I'm going to have neutral site viewing parties. Anything to make more money. No, it was good. I mean, like, I'll tell you what I liked about this bar, Tim. The Buffalo and Cincinnati are playing. They had all the TVs for the Penguin game.
All of them, huh?
Yeah, they had one that they would turn on between periods. But otherwise, it was the Penguins.
Mark Madden, you can check him out on the Penguins flagship station, 105.9 The X, Monday through Friday, 3 until 6. Check us out, Madden Benz, Unfiltered. We'll be on at 9:30 a.m. on Monday morning. We'll recap the NFC Championship game as well. By then, this is Madden Monday.